Welcome to Man Therapy. Man Therapy. Welcome to Man Therapy.
Welcome in, Man Therapy, episode number 28. We welcome Mike and we welcome Jeff to the show tonight. What's up, guys?
Hey.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, man. We've going through it. It's good to have you guys on this lovely evening and go through a little bit of housekeeping first. If you want to contact us on previous shows or other shows, mantherapypodcast@gmail.com. Look us up on social media at mantherapypod. If any advertisers out there want to advertise to our multitude upon multitude of listeners, maybe not, then please contact us, but that's totally not true. But
all seven,
we'll go with seven. I think that's a better number, but anyways, whatever.
Look, if you listen to us and we're your cup of tea, great. If not, oh well. We have fun doing this. It's therapy for us as well.
Absolutely.
I can't fucking blame you if you don't.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I want to, let's go start out by wishing everybody a happy Independence Day, a happy 4th of July, a happy Backup Terry Day,
Terry Bonilla,
Mel Gibson riding in epically on a horse, carrying a flag.
Wasn't July 1st the Terry Bonilla Day?
Was that when it happened? Was it on the 1st? But
I'm pretty sure.
Back up, Terry. Good Lord, Terry.
Yeah,
to this day, that's the most epic contract anybody could ever have signed.
Yes,
because I think he gets paid like $1 million up till like 2030 or 2035.
Are you for real? Is this for his, because I saw a picture of him on a firework. Is that why? Using his name and image?
No, it's his contract that he signed with the Mets. His agent was like the smartest person in the world, apparently.
I was talking about the 4th of July video and the guy in the wheelchair named Terry.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah, so you've seen that the video, right?
No,
You never saw that.
You never saw Backup Terry.
No,
they light a firework and he just freezes and he's in a mobile wheelchair, and the guy's like, "Backup Terry, good Lord, Terry," and he freezes and he's not moving and he's just sitting there and the fireworks going off, and so now his image and everything. I thought you were talking about this guy, the guy, but you're talking about baseball.
Okay. Yeah.
He's talking about Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Not Terry Bonilla.
Bobby Bonilla.
Bobby Bonilla.
Okay. Well, anyways, yeah, so that's what I was referring to, the 4th of July. So
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, watch it when you get off. It's great. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so what Jeff is referring to, Bobby Bonilla Day, here's why the Mets pay him $1.19 million every July 1st. For most of us, it is simply July 1st, but New York Mets fans know it by a different name, Bobby Bonilla Day. Each year on the 1st of July, the former Met collects a paycheck of just under $1.2 million. $1,193,248.20 to be exact, all the way until 2035. Why? Because the Mets deferred the $5.9 million he was supposed to make in 2000 when he was released that January and never even played, stretching it out 24 years with 8% interest. That means 5.9 million will actually be 29.8 million.
Dang. Man, I wish I could get that deal, man. You could dupe a team into thinking you're like an all-star pitcher and then get you to sign, man.
Listen. Take that. This actually involves Bernie Madoff. At the time, Mets ownership was invested in a Bernie Madoff account that promised double-digit returns, and the Mets were poised to make a significant profit if the Madoff account delivered. Madoff was returning 12% to 15% a year in what we now know were fictional returns. So deferring deals wasn't a problem because the payout would occur years later and the interest rate would be lower than the money they were fictionally getting back from Madoff.
Hmm.
So.
Man.
Yeah.
It sounds like they've made some smart decisions over at the Mets organization.
Bonilla's agent, Dennis Gilbert, was an insurance agent at the same time he developed into a super agent. Gilbert's clients included Bonilla, Barry Bonds, Jose Canseco, and Danny Tartabull. So he was more uniquely prepared to understand annuity-type payouts than other agents.
Oh.
Holy shit, man.
Because I've never heard of a payout with interest.
No.
That's crazy. But,
man,
I'd take it, though. I'd take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm still getting paid $1 million every year to.
Is it 2035?
Yes.
Yeah. Jeez.
Just to stay at home.
Nice.
And be Bobby.
Yep. Bobby. Well, anyways, I hope you guys had a good fourth.
Hang it, Bobby.
We kind of went on the different route there than Terry from the wheelchair Terry 4th of July celebration. So, but anyways, did you guys have a good Independence Day? Y'all have many festivities.
I did, man. We had birthday parties and then we had 4th of July parties, and so we were gone all weekend.
Let's see. Me and my wife celebrated our 8th anniversary on the 3rd.
Yep. Congratulations. Hey,
strong, man. Yeah, man. And so we went Saturday night to go see the Cleveland Guardians and the New York Yankees play.
Go Indians.
Yank these.
Yeah. Well, no longer the Indians. They are the Guardians. So, yeah, I was hoping to see the Yankees lose, but, you know.
Are they leading the division, the AL, or are they in the AL East? I don't even know. I haven't even Yankees, kept up with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Yankees are ahead in the East.
Them and the Sox, I think, 1 and 2.
Yeah, I think Yankees are.
Gee, Richard, I wonder if she plays for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, we had our yearly 4th of July get together where we blew up stuff and I played volleyball and. It was so humid down here. I was completely covered in sweat, jumped right in the pool. And we had hamburgers, dogs, good time, and a good American cookout. And it was makes 4th of July one of my favorite times of the year. And it's but I did notice that, man, fireworks are getting outrageously expensive. And
Everything is.
Yeah, it's it was crazy, but partied on.
My favorite meme that I saw was and enjoy work today, England.
Oh yeah, that's amazing. It's like it's so good.
That is cool.
Yeah, we and over the weekend we watched. I believe on Saturday, my wife and I got some nice. We had a stay home date night, so we had the kids went with my father in law and went to their house and spent the night, and we had a stay-at-home date night, and which we had a good time. And then well, I mean, 8th anniversary, man. So I mean, he probably had more more festivities than I did in the, in that regards. So fest into these festivities, I don't know, whatever. But then it,
Festivus for the rest of us.
Absolutely.
I not gonna comment.
Okay, there we go. There we go. So we know they had a good time, and we had a good time. And but I ended up, we my wife and I on Sunday night ended up watching The Patriot and the extended version. And we said, I'm not going to make it through this, but we ended up watching the whole thing. It was like 2 hours.
Okay, and 50 so
something minute. Yeah.
As opposed to what's the other one, the original cut?
It was like the theatrical. I don't know the difference, but I, it was on sale for $4.99, and I accidentally got the extended cut rather than the theatrical release version. And
I guess I was just wondering, like, what the difference was.
Probably
time. I was wondering too.
No shit, dumbass.
Well, I'm asking. You're the one asking. I told you.
No, I mean, I'm asking, like, you know.
It's a long movie.
Long movie. There's just different, like, different scenes in the movie as opposed to the other scenes. I mean, I can't remember exactly what was different, but like some scenes were longer. Mm-hmm. There were scenes that they had cut from the theatrical version. And, like,
I hadn't seen it in so long. I was just wondering if there was anything that stood out to you that was, significant added in
at the first of the movie when, one part of the movie where the kids are, it's at the first of the movie where they like go on the porch and witness a battle, like on their property out, you know, in the fields, and you see cannon and gunfire and all of that. And there's a scene that I don't remember in the theatrical version where they actually go out there and walk amongst the dead laying in the field that I don't think was in the theatrical version. There's stuff like that. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And, yeah, and there's like,
was there any extra hacking with the tomahawk?
There was an extra scene after the tomahawk hack where they pan back to the actual dude's head and kind of like the camera goes by it, but I don't think was in the main scene. Mm. And it's stuff like that.
It's really subtle.
Yeah, that movie. Like it gets you in the feels every time. I mean, his little daughter that doesn't talk. I mean, it is like, it's a great movie to watch before 4th of July, because my wife and I were just started talking. I was like, man, like the things that these guys, these, patriots or these, the people, our forefathers went through, like, it's just insane. We're like, the stuff that they had to deal up with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes or no? Did you get a boner and want to go storm the Capitol?
No, I did not. It made me really, it made me really, I didn't take offense to that at all. It did make me like question, like, hey, like all of this sacrifice and all of the things that have happened in our country. And now we're just a bunch of two party retards yelling back and forth at each other, you know, and
kind of makes you want to go back to British rule, right?
No, not at all. But it was just one of those things. It's just like, you know, man, they built everything with their bare hands. They single-handedly fought off and won twice against the powerful English Empire. You know, the king, and they were just farmers and, you know, self-educated people that, you know, they were here. And it's just, it blows my mind of like the sacrifice that they gave so we can spew our shit, you know, today on like in what we call social spaces. Did you have y'all like we my wife and I went to Boston a few years ago when we got stuck at a nor'easter there and stuck there for about like 4 or 5 days and couldn't get home. But we went, we had the luxury of going to the Paul Revere house. And have you guys ever visited that place?
No, I haven't been up in
like
I haven't really ever visited that region, man.
So yeah, it's actually it's like very historical, like of course that region is, but it's incredible. Like apparently we got his actual house is turned into a museum, of course. And but one thing that I thought was interesting, this isn't kind of an honor of Independence Day, the 4th of July, and the ability to have the thoughts that you have in this country, to have the freedom to say whatever you want to say. And but anyways, it's really interesting because have y'all ever heard the actual story? I know everybody heard the one about, you know, one if by land, two if by sea, the British are coming. Did you guys know that he actually never yelled that? And like,
yeah.
I honestly had forgotten that until you had said it, but I mean, like I'd heard something about that years and years ago, but like, so what is the actual story on that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually super interesting. There's actually, this all happened in, April 18th, 1775. And what happened was there was a 13-year-old boy in Boston at the Boston Common there. It's like this big, huge park. This website at Tripline actually has a map and then kind of leads you through the ride that Paul Revere went through. And there's a 13-year-old boy. He actually overheard British officers talking about a raid going to Lexington and to Concord. And they were going to in Concord, there was like ammunition stores and stuff that was supplying our troops at the time. And in Lexington, Sam Adams and John Hancock were leaders of the Sons of Liberty.
Herbie Hancock.
Yes. Yeah. And so they were actually hiding out in Lexington and they were the 13-year-old boy overheard this. So he went this boy. His name was Sam Bollard, went to the Green Dragon Tavern, which was a secret headquarters to the rebel group Sons of Liberty in Boston at the time. And he told the landlord of that tavern. And so that landlord sent a message to Paul Revere's house. So he gets the message that they're going to try to storm. The British are going to try to storm and get the Lexington Concord to get Sam Adams, John Hancock, and all of the supplies and stuff that they have stored up. So upon receiving the message, Paul Revere began his 20-mile journey from his house the house was built in 1680, just kind of a fun fact. And so
you said 20 miles?
Yeah, it's a 20-mile journey that they did. Holy and a shit, lot of people man. Don't know, but there was actually a second rider dispatched that night. So he was not the only one riding, and he didn't, anyways, on in the story. He went to Robert Newman, the historic Old North Church where, you know, it's where the lanterns were placed. And so he basically went to the Old North Church and talked to one of the clergymen there and basically told them to put, you know, two up if they're going to come across the water or if they're going to march along the land. And there were two different routes. Basically, the map of Boston, it's a shortcut basically to go across the water. And so they watching out, and they would put that up there. So Sam went, and they actually had two riders. And then about 10 p.m., Paul Revere at 10 p.m. rode himself across the Charles River directly under an English ship. So he had to like roll across the river, evade English ships and soldiers there at the same time. And he tipped off he was tipped off by the lanterns provided by him with this code about which way they were going to go. And so, he borrowed a horse named Brown Beauty. I guess that's what they called it. And he set off for Lexington. And then, Dawes, who it's not Charles Dawes. Was it Charles Dawes? I can't remember. Name. Anyways, the other rider, Dawes, was sent the long way around. So he went, Paul went across the water, and then Dawes kind of went south and kind of had to go ride south to go around this body of water, if you look at a map. Anyways, so he riding through present day Medford, Somerville, Medford, and Arlington, Revere warned patriots along his route. And he, and many of whom set out. So as he warned people, there were as many as 40 riders that took off from when he went across the Charles River. He started warning people in Medford at that time, and they dispatched people to go, talk to, I guess, tell other militia throughout the area. So he never shouted his famous,
which would make sense.
Yes. And he never shouted the British are coming. Mm-hmm. He was quoted to have said the regulars are coming out. The regulars are coming. That was what, like, I think from eyewitness accounts and letters that people had from that area. The regulars are coming out is what
regulator.
So all the regulars are turning gay. Well, that probably didn't mean.
Were they going to a bar?
It could be. I don't know. But that's what they said. It's a capital R. So they might have been talking. They're probably talking about the British, I'm guessing. So, So Revere arrived in Lexington around midnight with Dawes, the other rider. Arriving around a half hour later. And so he told Sam Adams and John Hancock, who were spending the night. They call it, it was in Lexington at the Hancock Clark House in Lexington, which you can actually go visit. And they spent a great deal of time discussing plans of action upon receiving the news that Revere brought, and also Dawes confirming the information 30 minutes later. So they then decided to go on to keep on riding north, kind of northwest onto Concord, because Lexington's about halfway in between and where the arsenal and the other militias were stationed. So they take off riding. Dawes and Revere stopped at the Buckingham Tavern in Lexington, and they were joined by Samuel Prescott, who was a doctor that happened to be in Lexington at the time. And he was also noted in this particular timeline. He was returning from a lady friend's house at the awkward hour of 1 a.m.
He was hitting that sneaky link.
He went to the sneaky link, but he decided to hit up the tavern at 1 a.m. So, you know, that
he kind of got to wet that whistle, boy. Yeah,
absolutely. So the Buckman Tavern was also the gathering place of the Lexington militia who faced the British regulars. So they are British at Lexington Green. So the next morning was that's where the militia was, and they end up facing the Battle of Lexington Green happened the next morning. So Revere, Dawes, and Prescott they took off. They were heading about like halfway. They hit a roadblock, and Revere gets detained but Dawes and Prescott actually were able to escape. And I think Revere fell off his horse, and the other two were able to make it all the way to Concord and warn them of the British. The British are coming, or the regulars are coming out, or supposedly. So, and Prescott was known for knowing, he knew the countryside. I mean, of course he did. I mean, he's visiting. He probably had many ladies of choice, it sounds like, you know. But anyways, Prescott, he knew the countryside. They delivered the news. So, and I don't think, see, I don't ever think Paul, I don't know if he ever made it all the way, because he was detained and questioned and all that. And the warning allowed the militia to prepare for the British troops on their way to Concord, and they confronted them at the Old North Bridge in the famous first battle of the Revolutionary War. So that's why it's popular, because it was the very first battle, and these riders, Dawes and Paul Revere, who gets most of the credit, and Prescott, all persevered to bring warning to so that we could fight the British, which is a pretty cool thing that I never knew, that there were two riders, and that he never really said the British are coming until I visited.
Not even the Redcoats?
Yeah, not even the Redcoats. He didn't even say that. They were the lantern and the steeple, all that's true. It's just, but still, it a feat for people to do this and go 20 miles horseback. And the war happened the next day. So on the 19th, it's crazy. And I thought that was really interesting, and a piece of history that listeners might like to hear about.
Get the posse together.
That they might like to hear about. So on the 19th of April, the first.
You know, I remember when growing up, and, you know, I can't remember. There was a certain story. It was a novel we had to read in class or for class or something. And I can't remember if it was, I think it may have been middle school, but it was, you start learning about how, you know, some of the, you know, Americans, if they were caught, you know, would be tarred and feathered and all that. And I just always, I don't know, that just always stuck out to me, like, you know, to be, you know, have hot tar poured over you, and, you know, and then feathers stuck on you and everything like that. Like, how bad that had to hurt. And,
oh, man. Yeah. I mean, just searing your skin and it won't come off.
Right.
I mean, and there's probably not much cooling it down. And it's just the sacrifices that these people made for us to be the absolute idiots that we are today is
right.
You know, something to be.
Thank you for allowing us to be more.
The thing, man. I mean, like, we have allowed so much division, and, you know, where we, I guess, push people to the side and everything.
Yeah.
You know, because of their differences of opinions and thoughts and everything like that. And, you know, have just straight up, I mean, some people have straight up hatred for anyone that has opposing views. And it's crazy.
I would beg that there were people in that era, because I think there's always been people that's crazy and
people you would consider evil,
but it's just
what you would call turncoats too, you know, they'd be, you know, basically feeding, you know.
Yeah.
British, you know, the
mm-hmm. you know, British sympathizers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, when I was reading some through about Paul Revere here, I think there was one portion in his, I think he wrote like several letters like giving his account to that ride and what happened that night to the start of the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned that he had to ride through like stealthily through some guy's property who was a known British sympathizer. And so that he basically couldn't be seen on people's property or be caught on certain people's property. So he had to this dude had to know like the area and the terrain, like we don't even realize or know, because.
Right.
Yeah, because he had to know where these sympathizers were, and if he didn't get there, they would have no warning as to the British were invading. And it's just a really cool story that two guys on horseback were all that was in between them and a surprise ambush, and possibly, I don't know if they'd say if it would have lost the war, but it would have set us back a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy to me that the difference in humanity then and now. And, it's also at the same time, very inspiring to me. It really does inspire me to appreciate the history of our country and to be like, these men accomplished, what a government that had never been seen in the history of the world and brought more freedom to people than the history of the world. And and one of the first nations to ever, we invented the light bulb. We one of the first nations to outlaw slavery. There's a lot of good, but there's a lot of ugly, but we have the freedom to be ugly, I guess.
Yeah. It'd just be nice to start seeing people come together rather than divide.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I'm saying? Not like turning their beliefs or whatever, but just being able to just be like, okay, all right, that's what you think, but this is what I think.
Well, sadly, we've become a selfish society.
Yeah.
I link that all back to, social media, where, people are so dependent on, appraisal from other people,
yeah.
Or look what I'm doing now.
Right. The social media arguments and everything like that. That was one thing that was supposed to, could have been a good. It's a good tool, to keep in touch with people that you don't. Haven't seen in years and everything like that. But at the same time, if you get just a little something on your brain and you just want to spew it out there, you're going to have somebody you hadn't talked to in about 15 years,
start an argument with you or somebody you don't even know.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Come out of the blue and,
see that stuff is like the whole documentary, The Social Dilemma, that we've talked about in some of the early podcasts. Is it's just since Facebook, which I hate Facebook, but since Facebook, because it's like almost guaranteed that you're going to have somebody argue with you if you put a thought out there on Facebook. It's just their algorithm is just like that. And that's the thing is so when Facebook went to having an algorithm determine your home feed, by the way, calling it a feed is just very ironic to me that it's, you know, it's just what you consume and what you eat, you know, who called it that. And anyways, but yeah, it's the algorithm, like in itself, like the whole social dilemma talks about is like, you are the product. It is free because you are the product, because they get your data. It's why, like, if you're on Facebook or you're around your phone and you say something about, man, I would like to hear something about those new tennis shoes that are coming out. And all of a sudden you're getting advertisements for tennis shoes. I mean, they use location, they use everything, because you are the product. They wouldn't. Yeah. And it used to not be like that totally, because I mean, the first days of Facebook was when you were like throwing cows at people and poking people and just posting pictures and saying, hey, and saying, I just ate a taco. And, you know, literally my posts were like that. It was good. But now it's become where they're literally harvesting data, and they're only showing you stuff that will get more engagement to keep you on the platform.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is like, I don't know. I mean, you guys may remember, but the only reason I remember is because I had a friend at the time. When Facebook first came out, there was only a select few, and it was schools only, like universities, that could sign up for Facebook. And you had to sign up using your school's email address. You couldn't use your own email address. It was schools. You know, and then that's when we all had, you know, MySpace at the time. You know, and I feel like given enough time, MySpace would have been the same thing that Facebook is, you know. But it's just crazy how this whole thing has evolved and how quick it has evolved.
Right.
You know, it went from, you know, where they created to be basically a hard or not site of you know, university girls to what it is now.
It's very telling. And it's, I mean, social media is just like, it is just, it's an easy thing to point to. But at the same time, that algorithm that we're talking about that just gets engagement, that could be taken to other areas like cable news, you know, like politicians. I mean, they spew out nonsense or hyperbolic facts, like for instance, like Gavin Newsom just bought a ad in Florida, you know, which is DeSantis, two, I guess, high profile political names on both sides of the spectrum. He just bought an ad in Florida to promote, like basically ask people to move back to California and basically say your freedoms are being taken away, while the people on the opposite side say California are taking your freedoms away. It's like, it's just a yelling game of no common ground. It's basically tribalism, and you're either red or blue and that's it. And there's no purple. I mean, it's something else. And like, I don't know, to be honest, how we get out of this spiral. How do we get out of this spiral?
Get rid of social media.
That would be a start, but is that going to ever happen?
Because no, absolutely not. But I mean, here's the thing, you know, and I don't know if we might have touched on it before. You know, like, I make fun of people for not a serious basis, but a funny basis, you know, talking about mental health and all this other stuff, you know, but in all actuality, like, your mental health is key, you know, it's a very key part of your survival in life, you know, but our mental health because we are so dependent, and I hate using that word when I'm discussing this, we're so dependent on, you know, what we can learn from one day to another off these social media sites. Our minds, our brains were not meant to take in as much information as we do at one time. You know why people lived longer back in the day? You know, not even with all the medical advances, man. We've got medical advances at the yin yang. But people live longer because they have less stress, because it took longer for them to obtain information, because, you know, it had to travel by courier or whatever back then. Now it's at our fingertips. So we're getting information right at the ready at all time, whether it be good or bad.
Yeah. It's just, it was a different era back in the times of the Revolutionary War. That I would say that there's more of a, back then there was more of a commonly accepted set of morality also.
Yeah.
And that has changed, especially in the political spectrum.
Well, look, I want to go back to this real quick, because this I have an issue with Facebook right now. Okay, there's a person on my Facebook. I'm gonna say whether it's male or female. Well, I'll go. It's a female, anyway. This person, you know, the stuff that she's posting, I don't want to see it because I think it's hot garbage. You know, I don't want to see it. You know, I don't do political stuff on my Facebook. That's just not what it's for. You know, I don't even post on my Facebook. You know, I've got family pictures and stuff on there and whatever. So anyway, so on the thing, you know how you can click, I would like to see less types of these posts from this person,
yeah,
right, on Facebook. And they're supposed to cut that out, right? Well, guess what? I see more posts of this person spewing that nonsense since I had, you know, selected to see less of this person's feed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's crazy. I haven't experienced that directly, but if that's crazy, if that's a common occurrence.
I'll straight up hit the unfollow button, man.
Oh, man.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I get that.
I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to be that person.
No, no, no. You
know,
you
because
stay
I did,
friends
like,
with them.
I'm not going to.
If you hit unfollow, you just don't have anything in their, you know, from their feed or in your feed from them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless you like go and look them up. So, I mean, like, I've done that to people because, you know, I've, you know, at times wanted to preserve, you know, some friendships or, you know, or just not piss off groups of people, you know, just so, I mean, like, I wouldn't see that and be compelled to write anything.
Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, I think I've gotten to the point where I just don't, you know, I just keep scrolling, man. You know, to me now it's like, if it doesn't apply, let it fly. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, like, I don't want to engage in something on Facebook because, you know, the things get misconstrued. Yeah. Tones get misconstrued.
Yeah.
You know, people get heated.
Exactly. Well, you know, my whole thing though is like, you know, I get people can have their own difference of opinions. I get that. You know, I'm not gonna default you, but there's a different, you know, I feel like these people are just so misinformed, you know. And this,
my question is, do you think that is done purposefully?
Are you talking about through Facebook? Like,
what I'm asking is that who gains from one side and the other side having different information and their versions of truth?
No, I mean, not if you want to be realistic, nobody gains.
Well, it's talking about is like, what benefit comes from that?
I mean, like,
Oh, I mean, are you just going to have people? You're going to have people at each other's throat consistently.
That's what it is. And like I said, I mean, you can go back the, you know, if you're divided, you're gonna fall. And
well, I mean, there's a reason there's a term called divide and conquer.
That came, and there's probably a history behind that exact phrase too, from in
well, from if that, you that think was, about this too, the politicians play off of that shit too now. Like they're,
oh, absolutely,
like almost to a sense where you, it seems like you're seeing less and less people that are, I mean, as far as politicians goes, you're seeing less and less that fall into both categories of either a conservative liberal or a liberal conservative. And, you know, they, a lot of times they want to preserve, you know, their constituents. And, you know, yeah,
what I'm seeing now is after the, you've got this trend now of when we have like the Chicago shooting, where is it? Harkland or
Highland Park?
Highland Park. That just left my mind. But the Highland Park shooting, you've got this phenomenon that happens that every time after something like that happens in our country, that you've got people on both sides trying to. Because I've seen it. I saw it on Twitter this past yesterday. You have conservatives trying to be like, oh, this is Antifa. This is clearly a Biden supporter. And they show all these pictures. And then you clearly see the other side trying to label, oh, this is pictures. This is a Trump supporter. So we literally go political rather than being like what's important? Is it our political party? Or is it getting to the heart of the issue and trying to come to common ground and figure this shit out?
Well, the whole thing is the dude had some mental health issues that were unaddressed, and, you know, little was done, you know, about some of the incidents and troubling things that have happened in his, you know, that troubling incidents that he had.
I mean, he had threatened his family in prior years with, and said that he was going to kill them all with a sword. The police came back and confiscated that from him because the family actually called. So he was known to authorities. And this seems to be happening all the time, that when somebody does this, they're known to authorities. And guess what? In Illinois, they have red flag laws. They have red flag laws that they tried to say would stop shooting. So why was that dude not flagged? Why was that dude? And he got a gun legally too.
Here's the thing is, like, I think the biggest failing, and I'm not going to put this on all, you know, local or city police or county, you know, police officials. But, I mean, like, there seems to be a breakdown in some of these departments. I'm not going to say all because I don't want to paint with a broad stroke, but there seems to be a breakdown on what should be done. And I mean, like, and that's a big heart of an issue that we need to start thinking about instead of, you know, I mean, yes, I'll say that I am for, you know, tighter gun restrictions. I'm not going to argue that point. But, you know, like, I think one of the biggest issues is we need to figure out why these things keep slipping through the cracks when there are people that are, you know, having obvious red flags. I mean, just like that kid in Michigan, you know, like, had the school, and I can't, you know, they were trying to do what they could, but had they gotten into his locker and looked through his things before he went back to it, you know, the kids that were shot and killed there wouldn't have been killed, you know, like, I mean, there many other incidents like that, that there were obvious red flags, obvious things sticking out like, oh shit, something needs to be done. Like, we need to pay attention to this guy. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. And a lot of, but at the same time, it's like the whole debate of like tighter gun. And that's the thing, is that there were laws in place to prevent that were not properly done.
Mm-hmm.
In Illinois,
right,
where this occurred.
I'm sure. And I mean, like I said, I'm not going to argue that point because I mean, like, you know, that,
you know,
that,
like,
that doesn't always apply. I mean, it does apply in some situations, but I mean, like this, in the ones that we've seen here recently, you know, there have been things said leading up to, you know,
like obvious things.
Right.
And
right.
And they were known to authorities. And but that's the thing. The political division immediately, one side goes to, we need to take away guns. We need to restrict guns. If there were no guns, this wouldn't happen. And the other side goes immediately to starting, you know, defending the guns. And I'm on the side that, you know, I believe that American right is to own guns. I mean, from back watching the Revolutionary War, if it was a bunch of idiots, not idiots, but a bunch of people with guns, but, you know, that was the reason that we won the Revolutionary War. And it's a inept right to be an American. However, there are things in place that were not. So it seems to be like Uvalde, there was a breakdown, the police, the school, there was a breakdown in systems that had failed these kids. And at the same time,
response, like, what the hell?
Yeah. Like, why was this, if they had red flag laws in Illinois, why was this guy not flagged? Why was he able to purchase a gun? He was already on record for threatening his family. And how was he able to get a gun? And this still happened. And, but if people in Illinois, all I'm saying is that the constitutional carry, a person with a permit could have downed this guy a lot faster than the cops. I mean, I know a lot of people fret at the more guns will be a safer society, and all of it's up for debate. And I think that everybody should have. I just personally, these schools that are gun-free zones, I personally think it's like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, people go to places where they know they're not going to get shot. Like, I mean, you're not going to break into a police station, are you? I mean, you'll get put down. I mean,
right.
It's a debate.
You go into, you know, I mean, you go far back as the Colorado shooter. I mean, that guy had some serious issues, and, you know, he went into a movie theater and just pegging off just innocent people.
It was a gun-free zone for
no damn reason. I mean, just to kill.
And that's the thing, is like, I'm under the agreement that teachers, especially teachers, I mean, I'm okay with gun owners having to go through training, background checks. I'm fine with that, you know, just to say that, because, you know, you don't want people with mental health issues getting guns. I mean, or not, or anything, you know, you don't want them, you know, a car can be a weapon, as we saw in Waukesha, you know, that.
Or fireworks is, I don't know if y'all saw the new video that came out where these people riding down the road shooting fireworks out of their car at these people in the buildings. Yeah.
It's
insane.
I'm going to go off on a tangent real quick right there. We used to shoot bottle rockets and Roman candles at each other.
Oh, it happened last night in our family.
What the hell?
Hey, by the way, guys,
that is
do not do that.
Bad news, man. like seriously, I think when we used to battle and everything like that, like we were like pretty careful to try not to shoot each other, but to shoot as close as we could.
Oh, I've had
holes
burnt in shirts.
Nobody wanted
to. I was hit.
Right.
Nobody wanted to see their friend lose an eye.
But what the hell, man? Well, I mean, like, but some of these people, like, straight up, like, are trying to shoot each other, like, you know. Seriously, like,
yeah.
What the hell were we thinking? We were reckless as shit. And I'm sure you were last night, Pat.
Oh, I mean, yeah. But that's part of the 4th of July.
Well, I mean, yeah.
You got to pass on the tradition somehow, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But I mean, going back to like the gun laws and stuff, I know my state is actually one of the very few states that he lives in now that, allow teachers to carry firearms. Now, that being said, it is up to each school district to allow or not to allow that to take place. But like, you know, I'm all for that.
This is my thing. Why do school teachers not get the same constitutional right to carry, conceal carry in a school that other people have that I would have? Even if they had to have extra training or whatever, but I think that a teacher should have the right to do that. And I guarantee you that these school shooters, these idiots that just kill to kill, especially in Uvalde, like that piece of garbage that went down there and killed like all these kids. Like if that teacher had have had the right to pack, she could have defended those kids and could have taken him out before one kid was killed. And they're not like, seriously, do you ever hear of police stations being like invaded or trying to go in to steal guns or something you don't, because people are going to take you out if you try to do that. Just like in the, like if you posted a sign that said, how they have the security system signs, but you put like we pack or, you know, there are guns in this house. People are going to think twice before entering because, I mean, their life will be at risk.
Right. And, you know, they're going to think twice about, you know.
But see, that's the thing. We don't the common sense kind of things. And believe it or not, I read this awesome article about. Gosh, I can't remember, but this about after Columbine, that this guy, he was like a retired, I don't know if he was tired, but anyways, he did weapons training. And so he started this program where he said he would give free weapons training or gun training to any teacher in the state of, I think they passed some laws where they would allow teachers to do this, and he would give free training to, you know, get, I don't know if they had to have it. I don't know exactly, but he gave free training to all teachers, and he ended up like doing like hundreds of teachers training, and they ended up getting an armed person or teacher or staff member in most schools in Colorado. And I think it really had a huge impact on these type of things. And those kind of things, like that's a conservative viewpoint. And I think there's correctness in it. But you can see correctness on both sides of the aisle.
Trying to get both sides to, you know, find the value in each other's opinions, is
like instead of going to hyperbole and saying you don't care about kids,
right?
You just want more because you want people to have guns. Like if you look at it truthfully, both sides don't want kids to die.
Exactly.
You
know?
No. That's what I was about to say. I don't sit here and think like people are sitting here like, oh, I don't care about these
right.
kids. I don't think that's it at all. I think, you know, people have their reasons for their views, and I can see both sides of the argument. I like mine better, but that doesn't mean
right.
you know, that theirs is any less.
Man, I tell you what, did y'all ever see, I know Missy had, or my wife had sent me this video of a school that has spent, you know, a ton of money on their school safety. I mean, like, you know, where the doors locked down and everything like that, and basically contained like shooters, you know, an active shooter and everything like that. And then there would be just fog or steam, whatever, smoke, just, you know, fill the hallway.
And like, that's awesome. And I'm absolutely for stuff like that, but I'm absolutely for it. It's just like, why can't we get funding for that?
Yeah. Well,
for that,
you know, that's the crazy thing is, you know, my kid's school got like a big grant when, during COVID, right?
Yeah.
And I don't really, I mean, as far as I know, like a lot of that money's probably just still sitting there. I mean, they could invest in something like that. Instead, we're more concerned about Juul, you know, vape detectors in bathrooms.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. I mean, like, seriously, guys, like, crazy stat. Did you know that we have sent more money? This is coming back around to this, but more money to Ukraine in the past few months than we spent in the entire 20-year Afghanistan war. And we can't find funds to send to schools to protect our kids or do something like that. Like, I'm all for it. Like, people, like, we want to do gun laws, but we don't want to do common sense measures like that, you know?
Yeah, you do have a point there. But, I mean, like,
I mean,
not to take away from, like, what's going on over there either.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, like, I'm still on the side of this whole thing was totally preventable. Like, Russia is doing better now, by the way. Like, their oil exports have actually gone up since we cut them off in parts of Europe. And they're actually
to who though?
I think China has the biggest jump, and then it's like Turkey, China, India. The U.S. is, well, there's a limited amount of the U.S. We've decreased it low, but it's, and the Europe. Europe decreased it a little bit, but China and others, I think, has taken the most. They're just getting all their oil. And Russia, like, their economy is actually doing good, which is crazy. Better than ours. And but the thing about this is I'm still of the belief this whole thing could have been prevented.
Oh, it could have, but you know, probably from years ago. I mean, of course, but I don't know.
It's just, and I don't, how long are we going to continue to give our tax dollars to this war that we don't even know? There was a news article about one of the it was a Ukrainian politician that got caught at the Hungarian border with like 20 something million in cash. And it's like, and what from videos and stuff that I'm reading is like, we're sending all this high tech war gear, all these, the ammunition and stuff. And they don't have, like, they don't know how to use it. I mean, limited training. Like, right. Russia just took over a major Eastern front. They're making progress and they're winning, which we thought Ukraine was winning for a long time, but it was actually the opposite. And like, it's crazy. And I think a lot of people are kind of asking the question now, when does it end? When are we going to stop sending billions of dollars over there? And and not even know where our taxpayer dollars are going to. And anyways, it was just that the whole point of that was just to say that if we can find the money for that, why can't we find the money for our kids to invest in those schools to provide those types of security systems, or to provide training for any administration officials to actually pack, to have responsible weapons and that do save lives in this case. Mm-hmm. And I would actually feel better with people there. But you also see that, like in Uvalde, even if you do have somebody, a good guy with a gun, they were a coward. And I mean, and that could have been, and the police department there even said that, hey, you know, they even made it said that this could have been stopped in under 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it blows my mind. And it's just, there's no willing to compromise. There's no willing to say the other side has a good idea. It's like, you've got to compromise somewhere. And I mean, we're all trying to get to the same thing. I mean, we're all trying to save lives. Yeah. We're all trying to help. And we all just want to go back to normal. And I don't know. I feel that it's a constant barrage of divisiveness now, that we're on a downward spiral, and we're going to have to either crash or, you know, pull out of it and see what comes of the wreckage. You know, it's,
you gotta stop finding the thing is we look for so much of what divides us than to what, you know, common ground we actually have, you know?
Yes.
And it's like you said, yeah. It's, we gotta stop coming to these big hyperboles, hyperbolic statements, and demonizing, you know, different schools of thoughts. I mean, unless they are truly evil, like as far as, like, you know, white supremacy, mm-hmm. and all that, or, you know, whatever.
Oh, don't.
No, I'm saying, like, you know, if it's one of those things, I mean, like, obviously we can't find common ground with people like that. You know?
Yeah. I get that. I would put that, it's just the, I guess, call them extremist. Mm-hmm. And, but
I mean, like, there's so many of us that you know, really do, you know, fall. I mean, whether, you know, people call themselves Republicans or Democrats, you know, day to day lives, they're not politicians, you know. That you know, we know personally, yeah. and interact with personally and everything like that. I mean, we have more in common than we do that divides us, and we got to get back to finding that.
Yeah. So, I guess kind of moving on, it's a little bit more of an hour, so we kind of move on, I'll skip some stuff, but I did want to bring up, I found this interesting tweet politics, but I found this interesting tweet talking to the electoral college. and how, you know, currently the system is winner take all. And, you know, every year, like, if, because like when Trump won, it was like, oh, we need to get rid of it. We need to get rid of it. You know, it's, you know, because it's like, it should be a straight democracy, popular vote, which I disagree with. But anyways, this guy had a really interesting tweet that it said. He said it was Justin Amash. I don't know who he's affiliated with or what. I just saw it on my feed, and he said states should stop allocating electoral votes on a winner take all basis. This requires no constitutional amendment. It could retain and strengthen the electoral college with better aligning it with the popular vote, and it would better reflect independent and third party votes. I just thought that was really interesting. So basically, just to give our listeners, like, you in each state, you know, I think they're going to, after the 2020 election, each state is allocated a certain number of representatives, and every state has two senators, and that doesn't change. And but based off population now, which is based off the census, you will get allocated. There's, I think, a formula, and you get allocated so many representatives. And so for each district that you're a representative in the House, for each congressional representative, you get a single electoral college vote. So basically what this is saying is that you would have California. So there are a lot of red areas in California. It's just that you've got the San Francisco and LA and San Diego areas that are so heavily weighted toward, in like down toward the Southern California, that that are absolutely blue, that it just blows the state blue out of the water. So what they're saying is a lot of the northern red areas in California, their electoral college votes would actually be able to go toward the president that they voted for. Mm. So they would not. So I think, was it 55 that California had this past? So a portion of those representatives that went red would go to, rather than all 55 going toward the Democratic candidate, their, you know, whatever the way your district would vote would go toward the candidate that won your district. So Alabama currently has, it would be, they have seven districts, and then you would add the two senators, so they have 9 electoral college votes. So based off of the actual land area that those senators represent, then, you know, it would be split, and it would more greatly reflect the more localized, right, what so it represents, rather than
the votes would go straight toward the president, and it wouldn't just take over.
Yeah, so in Alabama, so like the Birmingham area, if it went blue, which it seems to be around bigger cities, their one electoral vote would go to the Democratic candidate, while the other 8 would go toward the Republican candidate.
It's interesting.
So it would be close, so that the people in those states that say, if you know, you lived in California, you know, you would have a greater, I think you would have a greater voter turnout, because that in your area, you would be like, hey, this one vote, this electoral college vote, I actually could make a difference, and it could go toward the candidate I support, rather than knowing that the libs of LA are going to carry the state and just override what I think. And which is why I like the Electoral College in the first place, is because, you know, it allows people to like all people to kind of have representation, rather than a certain morality in a certain area in certain states to dictate exactly who the president is going to be. So, and it also forces presidents to actually go to these smaller states and campaign. as opposed to they would just stay in these big cities and they would never campaign in certain areas. But, and this might even make these candidates work harder. And I actually kind of like it. I'm against getting rid of it because a full democracy, in my opinion, is majority rule slash mob rule. That's what I think it turns into, because you would have all of these other, like, several 5 or 6 cities that would outrank everybody, and, you know, and they would just have to go, campaign in these cities. And, now these presidents would have to work their butts off to campaign these districts within these cities to try to flip them. And I think that it would more represent, and you might see closer elections and more well representative, and the people in these really red and these people in these really blue states would also feel that their vote counts.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
it's, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought I had something there to go along with that, but yeah, that probably would be a little bit more helpful to.
And like you, like Mike, like people that vote independent a lot of the times, I think that would reflect more of their votes, because you might have more areas and states go toward independent candidates rather than winner take all.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. You might actually see, you know, going back to your hyperbolic statements and everything like that, you might actually see presidential candidates actually trying to address issues and, you know, talk about actual issues instead of being hyperbolic and trying to attack, you know, left or right.
True. True. I just thought that was really interesting, and I would actually really be for it. And I think it would more, I don't think it would completely align with the popular vote, but I think it would be more representative of what the people want. Cause I don't want to go to just a straight popular vote, because I mean, I have a totally different set of morals than somebody in California have, you know, and I might see the world differently, and my voice needs to be represented, I can't even talk, but I just feel that it would be more representative of the popular vote, and more, I think you would see more independent candidates, because like these independent candidates could campaign hard in these heavily districts and win points. And you might see an actual independent and third party kind of rise out of this and see actually what the American people want. So anyways, but, that's all I got is, Jeff, you got anything to say?
You were muted there, man.
Oh, okay. Sorry, guys. I know.
Our buddy.
My son came in and he was playing around with He's playing around with the headset, so I muted it.
Yeah.
If you want to rant, it's your rant time.
Oh, boy.
I went.
Because I'm going to rant. All right. Here's the deal, guys. You know, and this is why I delete my social media most of the time. It's just nonsense, man. I scroll through, you know, and I see, you know, some people are, you know, what I would consider close friends, and some people are not. And, you know, like I've stated earlier, you can have your opinion. That's all fine and dandy. You know, your opinion may be stupid, but you're allowed to have it. You know, that's the great part about living in the country that we live. You're allowed to have opinions. You're allowed to have thoughts. You're allowed to have ideas. You know, they can, and they can be the most dumb, asinine ideas ever, but you're allowed to have them. You know, and then we've got people, celebrities, you know, whoever, you know, news personalities, what may it be, that like to gripe and complain and say that, you know, this country's moving backwards, this country's not good. If so-and-so wins an election, I'm moving. If so-and-so, if this thing gets overturned, I'm leaving. You know, here's my argument with that. And this is where I take it personal. Because we do live in a great nation. We live in a great state, or, you know, I live in a good state. I like my state. The great thing about America is if you hate it, you can leave it. And then guess what? Mm-hmm. You're also allowed to come back. There's not many nations that I know of, or if any, that would allow you to you know, degrade the nation that you're living in and then continue to live there. Like, that's where we are, where you can hate this country all you want, and that's still okay. That's your own dumb opinion, maybe, but you're allowed to have it because you live in the greatest nation in the world. You know, and it's so great that even those that hate it and continuously, you know, degrade, you know, the place where we live, refuse to leave it. Even though they say they're going to leave it.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard people, you know, they've compared us to fascists. Well, no, we're not a fascist country. Because if we were, you wouldn't be able to have those opinions that you have. You know, and that's a dear friend of ours that you know, compared the United States to fascism.
That's the thing, is that the way it was, the first government of its kind when it was created, and it was created for a balance of power, that no one person, that no one entity would ever be king or would ever have full control of others, or one branch wouldn't control the other, that it's checks and balances. And there is ways to change laws. There's ways to change what we see. Now, the way that that happens is unity. Yeah. It does not happen by division. Mm-hmm. And currently, everywhere you look,
right,
it's divisiveness. And by the way, an interesting stat that I learned, that I read, is like, our country has already was divided at one point, and we went to civil war over slavery. And economic reasons. There's economic reasons in there. But did you know that only 10% of the country was involved in civil war? 10% back then. And the other 90% were not involved in the civil war. And that's all it took.
Oh, you had... Yeah, people coming fresh off the boat from Ireland or wherever, and being thrown down, you know, into, you know, military uniforms, and, you know, to go fight for. I mean, yeah. I mean, and not even really, you know.
I mean, there's
probably knowing what they were fighting for, you know, part of the time. You know, I mean, and I'm, that's not to say that.
Yeah.
Every one of them were, but I mean, if you think about that, though, that's kind of the way it is now. Like, you know, you have everyone fighting over, you know, their divisive thoughts, and you know, well, Democrats aren't patriotic and, you know, or conservatives are fascists. And, you know, it's like, man, there's less of a division there than you actually think. There's, you know, there's people that are Democrats aren't
like, evil, I honestly think,
you know, Republicans aren't evil. Are there some that are? Probably, you know, on both sides, you know, you're extremists, but I mean,
yeah,
everybody is trying, you know, thinks that their thought is and so, the way the country should be run. And, you know, you have so many people from different backgrounds, yeah, and so many different thoughts, like, you know, shit's going to overlap on what you actually do agree with. Think about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's my thing too. You know, there's been decisions that haven't went the way that I thought they should. And, you know, it's, you know, big decisions in my eyes. But I've never for once ever was like,
absolutely,
screw this country. We gotta, I don't like it.
We got to find some sort of commonality and something to, you know, rally around. It, you know,
yeah.
That
yeah.
I don't know. We got to stop seeing. Well, it's, I don't know. We got to open up our hearts to be able to, I guess.
It's not politicians. Politicians aren't the answer.
No.
They're not the answer for this.
It's not. You got to open up your hearts to be able to, you know, see everyone else as an equal and, you know.
All right. Well, we got to hang this up and move on. Do y'all want jokes or y'all want jokes?
I got to go.
I want jokes.
Yeah,
which one? How many? One or two?
Just one, man. I gotta go.
Oh God,
just one.
Y'all gonna make me choose
the best one that you got.
Y'all gonna make me choose. Shoot. I can. I'm going through it. Do you want offensive or not offensive?
3, 2, 1, go. God. Offensive. What are you talking about?
Okay, so so I just finished composing a classical musical piece about R. Kelly. I'm calling it R. Kelly in A minor.
Oh my God.
Oh. I got more. But anyways.
All right.
That's horrible.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, Man Therapy. As you can see, we don't always agree. We love each other, though. And we don't condone anything that R. Kelly did. And anyways, contact us at mantherapypodcast@gmail.com. Look us up on social media at mantherapypod and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Send us emails. Anyways, thank you for listening, and we love you guys. We're out.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait till we take over Canada.